Today's presenter is Tony Bertolozzi. Tony works for IBM as a member of the CPSM change team. He has been in the computer business since 1980, working in a variety of support positions for the past 23 years. He has been a member of the CPSM change team for 13 years. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Tony.
Thank you, Elijah. First of all, I'd like to welcome everyone for attending. And I'd like to point out that there's another name on the first slide here, Mike Barrett. Mike had a major part in putting this together, but he's a little under the weather today, so I'm flying solo. If you find any mistakes in any of the foils, you can blame Mike. Otherwise, you can praise me. Just a little talk about what CPSM does with DTR processing. When a dynamic transaction request comes into CPSM, CPSM is going to build a list of eligible target regions, and that's based on the definitions that have been installed for WLM and the current connections. And then it assigns a score to each one of those target regions. And the score is based on the load count, which is basically a percentage of the number of transactions that are active divided by your max task value for that region. Some health factors, shortest storage, max tasks, dumping, so on. And then the link type. And then it sorts that list based on the scores. And the thing to remember here is that the low score wins. And if there is a tie, then it's randomized as to how the order of the list is built. If there's no site intervention, the first one on the list is going to be the one that CPSM recommends to KIX to route the transaction to or the request to. And this information is traced by CPSM, so that you can have an idea of what's going on and why. And if we go to slide two, we can look at our agenda for today. CPSM uses KIX tracing facilities. So we're going to need to talk a little bit about activating KIX trace, where to activate it. Then we're going to have to look at the type of tracing. CPSM writes two different types of traces, exceptions and what we call level traces, or in the vernacular, on-demand traces. Exception traces are always written. Level traces are only written on request. So we'll have to take a look at turning on level tracing specifically for WLM. Then we'll take a look at DTR processing, talk about some of the control blocks involved in DTR processing, along with the flow of what CPSM does during DTR processing. We'll look at what happens when an unexpected routing decision occurs. Why did we route to the, quote, wrong place? And it's not just a matter of looking at a trace. It could be other things that you need to look at. Then we'll look at a couple of traces, and one of them is a simple terminal start. The other is a little bit more complex DPL. And then we'll talk about a little bit about limiting traces, and then we'll open you up for questions and answers. So if we go to page three, we'll talk about slide three. We'll talk today, first of all, about trace activation. And there is an error on this slide, which I'll get to in a second. CPSM uses KIX tracing. And we're going to write to either the internal trace, or we will write to the internal trace, and to aux trace data sets. Now, for internal trace, you need the first two SIP parameters there, internal trace equals on, and trace table size. We recommend a trace table size of 2048. Now, the SIP parameter that's missing here is aux trace equals on, AUXTR equals on. And that should be specified also. Finally, CPSM writes as KIX user traces, not as system traces. So you want to turn system trace off and user trace on. And the reason for turning system trace off is that we don't want to flood with Kix traces. So where do you activate? If we go to page 4, slide 4, all right, Kix, our CPSM, always writes traces to the CMAS, all right? If the trace is coming from the CMAS itself, it's going to write it locally. If it's coming from a MAS, the MAS will write it locally and then ship it up to the CMAS so that it could write it. So we could always look at the CMAS AUX trace to get all the tracing information that we need for either that CMAS or all the MASs that are connected to it. However, there are some times we may want to look directly in the MAS AUX trace data set. And if we go to slide 5, first of all, if we're looking just at the MAS AUX trace data set, you're seeing just those traces from that MAS. You're not having to wade through other traces for that, for the CMAS or for other MASs that are connected to that. A second reason we may want to look at the MAS directly is if the task number matters to you. Now, what we have displayed on the screen here are two different headers from CPSM trace records. They're actually the header for the same trace record, one written by the CMAS and one written by the MAS. Now, the first thing that you see in the header is the task number. And as you can see, they're different, even though this was a trace written by a MAS. The important thing to remember in the CPSM trace header is that the task number is the task that actually writes the trace. Now, in a MAS, that's going to be the dynamic transaction or the transaction that's being routed. But in the CMAS, it's going to be the communication. It's going to be the communication record or the communication task for that controls the communications between the MAS and the CMAS. So you can see that the task number in the MAS is 556, but it's showing up as 43 in the CMAS. Now, if you look at the, because 43 happens to be the communications task in the CMAS, if you look at the third line of each of these traces, you see an entry for Kix task, and that also says 556. For records that are shipped up from a MAS to a CMAS, we do try to put that in there. The problem is that it gets truncated to three characters, the last three characters. So if this had been task number 1,556, you would still see 556 there. So if task numbers are important, it's always best to trace out of the MAS if necessary. As we go on to page 6, we've talked about AUX trace. Now let's talk about how we get the records in the AUX trace. As I said before, CPSM writes exceptions and level traces. The exceptions will always come out. The level traces need to be turned on. And they can be set either by a component or by a method. And a method is just a fancy name that we use for programs. All right. Dynamic transaction routing would be the WLM component levels 23 through 27. And that needs to be turned on in the routing region because that's where we're making the decisions and that's where we format the data. As we know, the MAS trace level is always shipped up to the CMAS. All right, now, which brings up a good point, and that is that there is going to be traffic going up from the MAS to the CMAS as long as tracing is active. So when you're done doing your tracing, you should turn it off, and we'll talk about how. So how do we turn on tracing? Well, there are basically three methods for doing that, and the first one is displayed on foil 7. And that is through the EYU PARMs. And this is probably the worst place to turn on tracing as far as WLM is concerned, because when you turn it on through the EYU PoRMS, it turns it on during initialization, and it's active from initialization on, which means that it may be active and it may be filling your aux trace data sets before you're ready to use it. All right. Of course, if you need to trace something that is occurring during initialization, you need to use the EYU PoRMS to set it on. The last two entries here in this sample EYU PoRM are examples of turning on tracing. The first one is trapping just a specific method, turning on level tracing for method NLRA, and it's turning on level 16. The last one there is the one that's turning on the DTR tracing that we would want, WLM component trace levels 23 through 27. On page 8, we see the second example of how we can turn on tracing, and that is by using the COD0 transaction. The drawback to this is that you need to sign on to the routing region to do this. Once you sign on, you issue the COD0 transaction, and you'll get the above display, which is the main menu for COD0. On that display, you will issue the trace flags command and hit enter. That'll bring you to slide 9, which is the trace flags display, which is the rows are the different CPSM components, and the columns are the different trace levels, starting with 1 up to 32. So we're going to go down to column or row WLM, which is the third one from the bottom, and go over to columns 23 through 27 and turn the zeros to 1. 0 says the trace is not active, 1 says it is active, and then we'll hit enter. And that'll turn on trace levels 23 through 27. Now, to exit the COD0 transaction, you would enter the exit command. But remember, you want to turn those 1s back to 0 once you're done tracing. The third method is to use an external interface, either the EUI or the WUI. On page 10, we have an example of using the WUI through CPSM version 3.2 to turn on trace flags. What we have displayed here is the main EYU start menu, and we would go to the KixPlex SM operations views menu. So you would go down and hyperlink on that, on the circled entry, and that'll take you to slide 11, which is the config view. In the config view, we want to select the MAS is known to KixPlex view. So we would hyperlink on that circle entry, and it would give us the MAS view on page 12. And on the MAS view, we would search down and find our TOR. In this case, it's CDM C0T1. And we would hyperlink on that, and that will give us the MAS detail view on page 13. And if we scroll to the bottom of the MAS detail view, we will find an entry for trace details, which we will hyperlink on, and that'll take us to slide 14. And on slide 14, we have an entry for each one of the components, and you would specify what tracing levels you want. In this case, I want tracing levels 23 through 27, so I specified 23-27. I could have also specified 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, if I want. After I mark what I want to select, I would then click on Apply Changes. Now, you can also do this through the EUI in pre-3.2 versions by using the MAS view, the update command, and then scrolling to the Control MAS Trace screen. And you'll have something that's similar to the COD0 display, except it uses N's and Y's instead of 0's and 1's to turn on the trace. All right, moving to page 15, we're going to talk a little bit about DTR processing. All right, there are certain control blocks that are involved in the DTR processing, and we're going to go through them at this point. The first one is the DFH-DY-PDS, and by its name you can see that it's a KICS control block, and it's actually the communication area between KICS and the Site Dynamic Transaction Routing Program, which in our case is EYU9XFLOP. All right. The DFH-DY-PDS includes information as to why the DTR program is being called, the transaction, the default location that KICS would route this to if there was no dynamic transaction routing program. And on the way back, CPSM is going to place within this area where it suggests KICS route the transaction to. Now, the next control block is the EYURWTDA, and we're not going to go over this too much because this is an internal CPSM control block, except to say that CPSM supports more than one version of KICS, and which means that each version of KICS has its own DFH-DY-PDS, which may be different from different versions. So in order to ensure that the CPSM programs that are making the routing decision don't have to have different versions of control blocks, we take information out of the DFH-DY-PDS and put it into the WTDA, and the WTDA is what CPSM programs are going to be using to make its routing decision. Now, the only reason I point it out is that the WTDA is traced, is displayed in the trace. We're not going to talk about it today, but understand that you will be seeing it. The next control block is the EYURWCOM. EYU9XLOP is the CPSM Dynamic Transaction Routing Program, and there's no room for customers to modify it. However, we did want a modification capability, so at certain points within the routing process, CPSM will call EYU9RAM, which is the user replaceable module within the routing, the CPSM routing model. The WCOM is the communications area between the standard CPSM programs and the RAM program, and it works similar to what the way DFH-DY-PDS works between KICS and CPSM. The last control block are the scope vector elements, and these are one element for each eligible AOR, or target region, that is available to be routed to for this transaction. Okay. In other words, the target region list is what the scope vector is. All right, if we move to page 16, there's some sample JCL that you can use to format the DFH-DY-PDS, the WCOM, and the WSVE. Now, the DFH-DY-PDS is going to come out of your SDFH MAC, and remember to use the SDFH MAC that matches your routing region's release. The WCOM and WSVEs are going to come out of the CPSM SEYU MAC, which would be the release for that release for that version of CPSM. Okay. Now, we're not going to talk too much about the WCOM today because it only comes into play when you modify the RAMCOM. Otherwise, the information that's put in is just taking the specific defaults, which means that when we ask for a scope list, CPSM will determine what's the best region to go to, and that is the region that we will go to with the default RAMCOM. There are ways to modify that, but that's outside the scope of this presentation. Okay. So now let's move on to to foil 17 and take a look at the general flow of DTR processing for CPSM. Effectively, KIX through the relay program will pass control to the DTR PGM or the DSR PGM, which is going to be EYU9 XLOP, passing the DFH DY PDS. EYU9 XLOP is really not our dynamic transaction routing program. It is our environment create program. It sets up a CPSM requirement. Specifically, it sets up for having dynamic storage areas so that we can baller between our programs instead of using ExecKix link to go from one program to another. And this cuts down on a lot of overhead for us. Once EYU9 XLOP is done setting up the environment, it passes control to EYU0 WDTR, which is our primary dynamic transaction routing module, and it controls the dynamic transaction routing, either by processing itself or by calling other programs. And the first thing that gets done is the TDA is built from the information that's in the DFHDYPDS, and the RAMCOM is also built. And then WDTR will call EYU9 WRAM. And RAM is going to make different calls to get the scope list, to balance that scope list, and those are the default calls that the default RAM will provide. And then it will return back to WDTR with its with the selected region to route to, or requested region to route to. Now, one of the things about RAM is that you can modify it. There is a drawback to modifying it if you don't have to. And that is, if you're using the default RAM, well, that actually resides in EYU0 WDTR, and we can call it by just ballering to it. However, if you specify your own version of RAM, then we have to ExecKix link to it. And as you'll see, there's a lot of calls between WDTR and RAM. And if we go to the next foil, I broke down where RAM got called to where RAM returned to WDTR at the end with its routing decision. And you can see the first thing that the default RAM will do was will issue an SM scope call. And that returns back to WTR where the scope vector gets built, and then that scope vector gets returned back to the RAM program. Now the RAM program can mark entries within that scope vector as ignored. In other words, I don't want you to route there. Right? The default RAM program doesn't do that. All the default RAM program does is say, okay, now I'll make an SM balance call. And at that point, CPSM through WDTR is going to decide which of the regions is the best region to go to. In reality, it already made that decision when it built the scope vector in the first place. So the scope vector that comes back from the SM scope call is already balanced. The only cause for the SM balance call is to look to see whether any of the entries have been marked ignore. And at that point, it would remove them from possibility. After the SM balance call, then the RAM program will return back to WDTR. And WDTR will select, or will use that selection of the best entry and return it back to KIX, modifying the DFH PDS, DFH DY PDS, so that KIX knows where it should attempt to route to. Okay, on page 19, so what happens if you think that we routed to the wrong place? Well, before you get into the tracing, the first thing you should ensure is that the workload, you're using the right workload, and that the TORs are active. And to do that, you can use the WUI or the EUI if you're using 3.1 or lower. first of all, look at the WLMA work view to make sure that your workload is active. And then the hyperlink to the WLMA WTOR view to make sure that your TOR is active. Now, if that's okay, then you need to make sure that what AORs you think are available are active. So you can hyperlink from, go back to the WLMA work view and hyperlink on the WLMA WAOR view to make sure that your AORs are available. The next thing you have to ask yourself is the workload being separated. Have you defined WLM defs, tran groups, and tran in groups? The best thing to do there is to start with the WLMA tran view and see if your transaction is listed there. And if it is, find out what tran group it's associated with, take a look at that, and then find out from the tran group what WDEF it's associated with, so you can look at what scope, what AOR scope we're expecting to use there, because it may not match the entire thing for the workload. If all that looks good, then you can trace it by turning on WLM trace levels 23 through 27. On page 20, we show what trace entries get displayed when you're tracing 23 through 27. CPSM identifies trace entries with two IDs. The first one is the trace point ID, which is a numeric value, where the first two characters are the trace level. So if you look at that first one, 27001 is trace level 27, and it's a subcode of 1. The second part of the identifier is the debug text. Now, the debug text is just an 8-character value that the developer chose at some point to give some identifying information to the trace. All right. Now, in a DTR trace, 27001 WDTR DTRC is an entry from KIX. With a formatted DFHDYPDS. A 27002 WDTRDTRC is a return back to KIX. So the first thing you're going to see in a trace is a 27001, and the last thing you're going to see is a 27002. And in between, you'll see the 23 levels, the 24 levels, 25 and 26. 23s are just headers, and all they are is an indication of whether the RAM program is making, or when the RAM program is making, an SM scope request and a return from an SM scope request, or an SM balance and a return from an SM balance. 24 level is always going to show a formatted WDTA. 25 level is always going to show a formatted WCOM, and the 26 level is always showing a WSVE. Now, if we move to page 21, we see an actual trace from a simple terminal start. And this is the complete trace in abbreviated form. As you know, when you format CPSM traces from a KIX AUX trace data set, you can ask for abbreviated and or full. In this situation, we've asked for both, and here's the abbreviated version. And you can see the first one is a 27001, and 21 is a 27002. So we have the entry from KIX, and the last one is a return back to KIX. And in the middle, there's a bunch of other stuff going on. And if you go to the next page, on page 22, you'll see a little help identifying each one of those entries. All right, sequence number one is the entry for, we can't tell from the abbreviated format, but it's an entry for route select from KIX. KIX is making a call and asking us to select an AOR or a target region to send the request to. Record 2 there is where RAM is making an SM scope call. And records 3 and 4 are simply the WTDA and the WCOM formatted at the time of the call. Record 5 is a 23002 for SM scope, and that's a return from to RAM from CPSM doing the SM scope request. And records 6, 7, and 8 are the WDTA, the WCOM, and number 8 there is the most important. It's the scope vector returned from CPSM. And that matches this transaction, this request. All right. Record 9, the RAM program makes the SM balance call, where 10, 11, and 12 are the TDA, the WCOM, and the scope vector at the time of the call. Now, the scope vector could have been modified by the RAMCOM to mark some of the entries as ignored. Again, we're using the default RAM in this situation, in this presentation, so we won't see that. Okay. Record 13 is the return to RAM from the SM balance call, and 14, 15, and 16 would be the TDA, the WCOM, the scope vector. 17 is the WCOM return from RAM back to WTTR at the end of the route select process. And finally, 18 is the return back to KIX with an updated DFH-DY PDS making the indicating where the route should go to. 19 is another 27001. It's a call to CPSM from KIX. In this case, though we can't tell, we'll be able to tell from the full trace, but this is the route complete. The route is has been completed, and it's just an indication coming back to CPSM that it's done. 20 is the updated RAMCOM at the end. And finally, 21 is a return back to KIX saying we're done, everything is complete. All right, if we go to page 23, we see the first of the full trace. And this is the first record, and this is the entry from KIX to CPSM. And the first byte there, at offset zero, indicates what the request is for, and a FOX 0 says this is for route select. And we'll see some other codes as we go along through our examples. At offset 1 indicates which KIX caller is making this request. And you see out in the EPSIDIC port there, you see an RT, and that is the relay program is making this request. We go down to offset 1-2, you see a FOX 0 there. This is the route type, and a FOX 0 indicates that it's a terminal start. At plus 14 and plus 34, identify what the request is being done. The request is being done for. Plus 14 is the transaction ID, plus 34 is the program name. And finally, at offset Charlie and 2 Charlie is the identifiers for where KIX would have sent this if there was no dynamic transaction routing program. Offset Charlie is the SysID, and offset 2 Charlie is the Apple ID. So we would have been sent, or KIX would have sent this to SysID Charlie0T1 or Apple ID CVM Charlie0T1. Which happens to be our routing region. And that is the default values that are associated with this transaction that's being routed. Page 24, we show the scope vector that's returned from SM scope processing. Now, as I said before, if RAM makes no modifications or makes no changes to the way the default RAM works, then the initial scope vector return from the SM scope call is already balanced, and the first one in the list is the one that CPSM would be recommending to KIX to route to. The scope vector starts off with a header, and at offset 20 in that header points to the first scope vector element, which would be at offset 84. The scope vector elements are 38 in length, so the next element would be at offset Baker Charlie, the next one at offset Fox 4, and so on throughout the list. On page 25, we've broken those elements out, so please go to that foil now. To make it a little bit easier to look at, we've broken these elements out, and we can see we've formatted four elements. We formatted an element for CVM Charlie 0 Able 3, CVM Charlie 0 Able 2, CVM Charlie 0 Able 1, and then one that doesn't have an entry, and I'll explain that in a little bit. Okay, let's take a look at the first entry. Offset 0 is what we call the AOR token. All it is a pointer to a control block for the AOR, which is an internal control block within CPSM. At offset 8 for 8 characters is the Apple ID of this scope vector element. At offset 10 for a length of 4 is the load count. Those are the amount of transactions that are currently active in that region. So for CVM, for the first entry, CVM Charlie 0 Able 3, there are 17 transactions active. For the next one, there are 19 transactions active. And for the last one, there are 17 transactions active. Now, the load count is based on the number of transactions active and the max task value for that region. So you need to know what the max task value is. We do not display that in the scope vector. Okay. At offset 14 for a length of 1 is the route error indicator. If there had been a route error, then this would be filled in. A Fox 0, as it is right there now, indicates that there had been no route error. Now, this is for the situation where we make a recommendation to Kix that it routes to someplace, and it comes back and tells us we had an error, so we select someone else. We want to keep track of the ones that we had an error to, so we don't reselect them during this transaction routing. At offset 17, we have an indicator of whether this entry is selectable or not. A Charlie 1 means that it's selectable. A Fox 9 means that it's not selectable. Now, if you look at the first three entries, you'll see that they all have Charlie 1s, or in the EBCDIC format, ABLE, there. The fourth entry has a 9, or a Fox 9. This is not selectable. This is an AOR that is not currently active. And all the other AORs that are not currently active within this AOR scope would have entries here, but they would all be non-selectable. Okay. At offset 20 for length of 4, we have the sysid. At offset 24 is that ignore bit that can be set by the RAM program. A Fox 0 says use it. A Fox 1 says ignore it. At offset 28, is another major factor along with the load count in determining whether this region will be selected. At offset 28, 29, 2 Able, 2 Baker are bits that indicate the health of this region. 28 indicates short of storage health, 29 max task health, 2 Able stall health, and 2 Baker dump health. A Fox 0 means it's healthy. Right, and you can see that for all a Fox 0 means healthy, a Fox 1 means sick, and a Fox 2 means unknown. And you can see if you look at the three entries that we have there, they're all healthy except for the third one, which is sick with a dump, taking a dump at this point. Okay. Some other fields in there, 2 Charlie would be the link status. A Fox 0 says that the link is active. A 2 Dog would say if you know CPSM routing, you can define or you can associate an RTA event with WLM routing. And that's what this is, the severity of the event that's associated with this route. Now, if it has a dog 5 there, as it does in these situations, it says no event is associated for this route. All right, and the last thing you see there, the E650s, if you're looking in the EBCDIC or the Charlie 5, Fox 6, Fox 5, Fox 0, that's the release of kits that the AOR is running, or the route target region is running. In this case, they're all running E. We still use the E for ESA instead of a Z, and they're all running KIC 650. If we go to page 26, we've cut to the chase here. We've gotten to the end of SM scope and SM balance because CPSM is, we're using the default RAM. And we can see in here that at offset 1-4 and at offset 2-Charlie, excuse me, at offset 1-4 and at offset 3-4, CPSM has replaced the default of Charlie 0 T1 with Charlie 0 A3, because that's what it's selecting here for the routing. Right. And it's returning back to KIX. This is a 27002 and making its route suggestion of Charlie Victor CVM Charlie 0 Able 3. On page 27, we have another 27001, which is the return back to KIX, back to CPSM from KIX. And if you look at the first byte, it's a FOX 2, and FOX 2 indicates route complete. And CPSM will return back on page 28 to KIX. No change, but we're done. And this is the end of that routing transaction process. This would be sequence number 21. So that was a simple terminal start where everything went the way we wanted it to. How about a little bit more complex scenario? Let's take a look at page 29. And on page 29, we're going to start off with a DPL request. And that's the 0RT, the first arrow going to the right. CPSM is going to recommend Charlie 0 Able 2 and return that back to KIX. That's the arrow going to the left. The next thing we see is a 1RT. The 1 says route error. Alright, the 0 is route select, the 2 was route complete, the 1 is route error. So KIX is going to return a route error for us for Charlie 0 Able 2. That's the right arrow. And now we're going to select Charlie 0 Able 1. That's the left arrow going back. And KIX is going to fail that also, or that's going to fail also. KIX is going to return again with route error to CPSM for Charlie 0 Able 1. That's the next right arrow. And as we're going to see, those are the only two available target regions in this at this point. So CPSM at this point is going to return back the default, Charlie 0 T1. That's the left arrow going back. And KIX is going to be successful with that. And we're going to the next thing we're going to see is a route complete for Charlie 0 T1 and then a return back to KIX. Okay. We're just going to look at the full trace on this. The abbreviated trace is available on pages 48 through 50 of the presentation. And there are 51 records versus the 21 that we saw for the simple terminal start. On page 30, we see the initial route select. Offset 0 is a FOX 0. And again, note the default sysID is Charlie 0 T1. And the default Apple ID is Charlie Victor Mary Charlie 0 T1. On page 31, we have the scope vector return from SM scope, and if you go to page 32, we have it broken down, and we have two valid entries, two selectable entries, one for C0A2, the second one for C0A1, and then we start our non-selectable area. So since we are using the default RAM, Charlie 0 Able 2 is going to be our choice, and that on page 33 is what will return back to KIX in the 27002 trace. And on page 34, we have a return from KIX back to CPSM, and if you notice, the first byte is a FOX1, which indicates route error. If you look at offset 4, it's the reason for route error, and a FOX7 is a DPL failed with a program ID error, program not found in the target region. All right, on page 35, now we see the scope vector as a result of the route failure. And if you notice, at the top of the list now is Charlie 0A1, and Charlie 0A2 is way at the bottom of the list. Okay. If you look at page 36, you see them broken down. And the first entry is for Charlie 0A1, which is still selectable and still A-OK to go. All right. And then you see the next entry, which is the first of the non-selectables. And then way down at the bottom would be the entry for Charlie 0 Able 2. And if you notice at offset 1-4, there's a FOX 5 there, which is our indication within the scope vector that this element had a program ID route error during this route selection period. So our choice here is going to be Charlie 0 A1. And if you go to page 37, you will see that indeed we were returning to KIX recommending Charlie 0A1. And if you go to slide 38, again we have another route error call from KIX, and it again is another program ID error. At offset 4, you see the FOX 7. We go to page 39, the scope vector now shows Charlie 0Able 1 at the bottom of the list following Charlie 0Able 2. And if you look, the first entry now is marked non-selectable. And if we had shown the rest of them, they were all non-selectable. So CPSM has no AOR to select, so CPSM is going to return. If we go to slide 41, sorry, we skipped 40. But if we go to 41, CPSM is going to return the default, Charlie 0T1, CVM Charlie 0T1. And the next slide, 42, is now a route complete. The KIX was successful in routing it to Charlie 0T1, which is local. So the program ran locally. And now CPSM is returning back to KIX on slide 43 with the last trace for this request. Okay. And that's it. That's our tracing. If you go to page 44, though, I do want to talk a little bit about limiting trace output. You can see here that one simple trace took 21 records. Multiply that by the number of transactions that are running within your environment at a given time, and you can determine how many trace records we're going to be writing. So you really want to limit it as much as possible, one, to ensure that you're not flooding, and the other, to ensure that you're not having to wade through a lot of information to look at your trace. And one possibility, and this is a Mike slide, the issue is spelt wrong in there. It should be ISSUE, and actually it is spelled right now. How about that? But I guess Mike fixed that. All right. One of the things that you can do to limit what is in your aux trace display is to turn on and off tracing just before and after you execute your transaction. Now, the COD0 transaction allows for two commands that you can do that easily with. Just before you issue your transaction, you can specify trace on reset. Now, what trace on reset does is if aux trace is active, it stops it, and then it restarts it with file A. Then you can run your transaction and do trace off stop, and then it will stop aux tracing at that point. And that sort of limits what you have in your display, so when you format it, you're not wading through a lot of information. Now, you can achieve the same thing through the WUI by using either the EYU Start Kicks Region Detailed View or the EYU Start CMAS Detailed View, depending on whether you're going to be using your MAS or your CMAS aux trace. And in there, unfortunately, trace on reset has to be two parts, doing an aux stop and then an aux start. And then after you run your transaction, you can do an aux stop. If you're doing this in production, again, make sure you realize how much trace records we're writing and how long you need to keep it active, possibly a second, possibly a couple of seconds, but probably not much more than that. Okay. And with that, we go to page 45, and we can summarize what we talked about here a little bit. We talked about enabling tracing, where and how. We've talked about CPSM level tracing and turning it on. We've looked at our DTR processing, CPSM's DTR processing, and we've looked at the trace entries. We went through a simple terminal start trace and a more complex DPL trace. And then finally, we talked about limiting trace output. And with that, I'll return back to Elijah.
Thank you, Tony, for a great presentation.
We'll take our first question from Robert Zunick.
Yes, I had a question about using CPSM using the goal method. And we're experimenting with that right now. And just did some tests on Tuesday, as a matter of fact, and didn't get the results we were expecting in trying to artificially constrain workloads. So just kind of curious, is there any WLM, NVS WLM information that's visible anywhere in the trace entries to give us a hint why the WLM information coming back may not have influenced things the way we thought they would?
No, we don't have anything displayed in there. I'm sorry about that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go next to Pat Gwynn.
Hi. The offsets that you were talking about in all the trace entries, is that in the trace manual?
No, it's not. You'd have to format those control blocks. All right, on foil, I forget which foil it was.
Oh, the one earlier where
right.
You had the three.
The sample JCL, yeah, that was, if I can find it. Foil number 16 will allow you to format those. I believe the WCOM and there's probably some place in the manuals where the WCOM and the WSVE are also indicated, but I mean the best thing to do, in my mind, would be to go right to the assembly listings.
Another question I had was we're using, or I've been doing some tests with the workload threshold parameter because we're running one of the target regions over on another LPAR. Would there be, if we're doing this testing to figure out how the load's being moved, is there anything in the trace entry we should be looking for as to when it determines that he's going to start moving workload to another environment?
Right now, what you would have to look at is whether your load hit that threshold level,
mm-hmm.
And you'd have to take whatever the load count is and divide that by whatever the max task is for your thing. We don't show that percentage in here. We just show the load count. We don't show the max task and, or the percentage. But that would be what you'd need to look at in there to say whether you've hit that threshold.
Okay. At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Tony, for presenting today.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.